Today's guest was with the Santa Barbara Police Department for about 21 years and then spent almost 5 years as a reserve. And then for the last almost 5 years working for the district attorney's office as an investigator, focusing on real estate fraud and elder abuse. Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Greg Hans.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. In the first segment, I was mentioning the gal that used to come on, and I couldn't remember her name. I know she changed last names. Do you remember that off the top?
Yeah, Jennifer Glimp.
Jennifer Glimp, and then she became Dalton.
Jennifer Dalton.
Right. So your role, she was also a police officer, and your role now as an investigator kind of similar to what she did?
Yeah, I have a little different path than Jen. I started out working for the Santa Barbara Police Department, and about 4.5 years ago got asked to come on as a part-time investigator for Santa Barbara County District Attorney's Office. And I actually started in the Consumer and Environmental Division and did that for about a year. And then when that position became full-time and I didn't want to work full-time, they asked me to take on a different caseload. And so currently there's two of us that are part-time and we share a caseload. My primary assignment is financial elder abuse cases. And then I back up my partner on real estate fraud. Her primary is real estate fraud. And she backs me up on financial elder abuse. So it's been a fun journey, a little different than the way Jen did, but I've been slowly learning and investigating real estate fraud for about 3.5 years now.
Nice. So my first question, of course, based on all this, is how do you make a slow gin fizz?
Well, then you'd be going back to my bartending days.
I wanted to bring that up because you were telling me, my guest Greg Hans, he's a district attorney investigator right now, but prior to going to the police academy, he was bartending at Cold Spring Tavern. And he told me that when he became a police officer, that police officers can have side gigs as bartenders or bouncers or the like. Why is that?
Cannot. The state really wants there to not be any conflict of interest, with kind of that mixture of alcohol and law enforcement. A lot of our contacts in law enforcement are precipitated by, drinking, the effects of alcohol. There's so many things that we do in that profession that are related to alcohol issues that the state body, DOJ makes recommendations on what departments should allow their officers to do off duty, or if they're going to allow extra outside employment. And so that's one of the bright line examples, is they just really don't want cops doing anything where they're serving alcohol or being asked to deal with people in an off duty situation that have been drinking a lot, like being a bouncer or something like that. So that's where that comes from.
So my guess is that they expect that there could be instances that arise and they don't want the liability. But on the other hand, it seems like a bouncer or a bartender who is a police officer is kind of like the best thing. Like, you're already there.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. It's more so for the liability side, because you figure when you're on duty and you're acting in an official capacity, whether you work for the city or if you're a sheriff, you work for the county, those agencies or those governmental entities are required to indemnify you if you're acting in good faith in the course and scope of your employment. But you could blur the line there if you were to say, well, that person is a police officer or deputy sheriff, and then they're off time, they're serving alcohol, and then somebody goes out and gets in a injury DUI collision. Well, you could have an attorney come back and say, well, that officer or that deputy, even though he wasn't on duty at the time, he or she should know better than to serve a person that's going to go out and get behind the wheel of their car and drive and hurt my client. So you can see where it just gets really off into the weeds with the liability. And again, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's probably one of the biggest driving factors of those policies is liability.
My guest is DA investigator Greg Hans. The circling back, and I want to circle later back to use of force and guns, and there's some non-lethal weapons I see advertised. But getting back to your bailiwick, one case that was real estate fraud, elder abuse, and murder came into light was this Pauline Macareno story that involved initially just real estate fraud and then murder of this poor 96-year-old Montecito widow, Violet Alberts. What happened there, and where is it now?
That's a tough case because that was basically one of the very first cases I ever got pulled into early on in my real estate fraud career. My partner was the primary investigator on the real estate fraud. And so we went up to interview Violet, and we, sweet old lady, my partner was working through the case, and we actually, you know, my partner had an arrest warrant for the suspect, for Miss Macareno. And we were just deciding when we were going to go down to LA and arrest her. And then all of a sudden we got a call that Violet had been murdered. So, you know, that started a whole chain of events and an investigation that spanned, I think that took us 2.5 years total between all the agencies that worked on it. And it was a very complex, interesting, sad. It had all of the emotional roller coaster ride things that you could think of. But hopefully at some point it'll make a good Netflix series. Unfortunately for the listeners today, the case is still actively working its way through the court system. There's a total of 4 charged defendants. 2 have, I believe, I know the preliminary hearing on Pauline and another co-conspirator has occurred, and they've been held to answer, meaning that case will continue to move forward. And then there's 2 male suspects who are in custody. And to tell you the truth, I'm not even sure that their preliminary hearing has occurred yet for scheduling purposes. But anyway, so it's still actively being litigated. It was, like I said, heartbreaking case to start with. And then it just, when we found out that she'd been killed, it just took a terrible turn. But I will say that that investigation spanned numerous law enforcement agencies. We partnered very closely with the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Department. We had also partners with other law enforcement agencies, and everybody really worked their tail off to see justice done for Violet.
I hope you get back to it. My guest, DA investigator Greg Hans, looking at an article, Violet Alberts was killed back in May of 2022. Are you saying that more than one person, Pauline Macareno, is being charged with her murder, or has that been decided?
There's right now there's 4 people in custody on charges related to that homicide. So, okay.
At first glance, it says in the article I read that the accused, Pauline Macareno, who is already serving time now for fraud, was introduced to her by her groundskeeper.
Correct.
Is he one of the people involved?
He is not currently in custody.
Okay. So, I mean, at first glance, she had outlived her money. She was living in Montecito. And this woman was, who's a real estate flipper out of LA, kind of gave her a private reverse mortgage. It's too bad, you know, Violet Alberts didn't just do a traditional reverse mortgage, would have been probably open to her. And so at first glance, a private party doing a reverse mortgage doesn't seem like a bad idea. And, but apparently then they went to record to put her name on the deed, which I don't think that happens with a reverse mortgage. I used to interview a guy continually about that, and I don't even know that. That's too bad. But yeah, it's too bad. At first glance, you know, a private reverse mortgage could work, but well, that's a brutal case. And we're now here at the end of 2025. It's going to take well into 2026 until we know what's resolved with this.
Yeah, I would venture to say that at least 2026. Okay. It's a very, very complex case. Okay. So, and again, like I said,
How would you compare that case in terms of the real estate fraud with maybe some of a couple of the cases in general terms, the kind of cases that you deal with?
Well, there's a lot of similarities, and you know, as you probably know, if you've been around Santa Barbara long enough, you have, unfortunately, a very target-rich environment when it comes to an aging population that has a lot of, they may not have a lot of cash wealth, but they have a lot of equity in. So, you know, let's say you bought a traditional tract home in Santa Barbara, you know, in say the 70s, you know, for somewhere in the $100,000 or $200,000 range. And that home now, and you lived in it your whole life, and you raised your kids there, and now you've got grandkids, and you're in the same house, or maybe you've moved a couple times, but you know, you continue to build equity. And so we have a lot of elderly folks with a lot of equity in those properties, and people that, you know, participate or do these real estate fraud schemes, they understand that there is a huge amount of value in, you know, if they can record false deeds or get these people to, you know, sign on for a reverse mortgage that has super unfavorable terms. And then you add into the fact that, you know, a lot of people that are getting older here in Santa Barbara, their kids and probably grandkids have had to move away because of the cost of living here in Santa Barbara. So the family ends up being separated sometimes by, you know, just distance. Sometimes there's distance and some whatever past family history. And these people don't have the connections locally of people like, you know, staying in touch with them and just making sure they're not falling for scams and all that. So it's unfortunately super prevalent.
That makes sense. My guest, DA investigator Greg Hans, I too target the elderly with high equity in their homes, but not for nefarious purposes. I want them to list and sell their house with me. now, what I know I've spoken many times with people from the recorder's office, and those guys, they really look for the red flags, and a lot of it, they don't even get a chance to record. I, on my podcast site, you go to radiorealestate.com, I have the link every week that was given to me, I think by Melinda Green. And every week on a Friday, I have a reminder, and I just go there and I put in my name, and I verify that the last recorded deed was in 2021 of June. And every week I check, and then I know, you know, that's one way to protect yourself. Do you have any other ways that people should approach this and protect themselves?
Yeah, what you're doing is the absolute best, you know, and it's a little labor intensive, but you've got the reminder every month or every week, and so that's great. You know, there are services that you can pay that, you know, advertise that they're deed watch, and what I haven't done a lot of research on those, but my partner did some, and she was hearing that a lot of those, they get a lot of false positives where people get notified that there's activity and it turns out that it's not. One thing that my on the you probably had people on that have talked about the vacant lot scam, where people will contact a realtor. Maybe you've even been contacted by scammers who say, "Oh, I've got this vacant piece of property in Santa Barbara and I need to sell it fast. Can you get it on the market for me ASAP?" Have you ever been contacted by anybody on that?
Yes.
So what my partner came up with, and it actually works pretty well, she did it for her own property, is you can create a Google search or a Google notification if a term, a name, anything. You can create anything, and if that parameter that you set with Google gets input into the internet, either in a search or on a page, it'll notify you. And so if you have a piece of vacant land, or even if you're worried, like especially if you have like an Airbnb or something like that, and we have the Airbnb scams where people will sort of relist a legitimate listing and they'll start taking money from unwitting victims who think they're reserving a place to stay in Santa Barbara, and they don't, they get here and they, you know, already sent money electronically to the scammer and not the real renter. Anyway, if you put, you know, an address that you're associated with in this Google notification, so let's say somebody creates a fake advertisement for your, or the unknowing realtor gets duped and creates a listing page for your address, your piece of vacant property, well, you're going to get notified, and real quickly you'll be able to flag it and, you know, act on it. So that was kind of a cheap, quick fix that my partner kind of created, and it seems to work well.
I imagine she might have, you know, put it in and then maybe did a test, had you or someone else try to do something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I got to tell you something, Greg, my guest DA investigator, Greg Hans, that was worth the whole interview right there. That little nugget, everybody can create a Google notification, and to backpedal on what you said about these monthly, companies that charge you, title lock, boy, Melinda Green, everybody I've ever interviewed thinks that it's just a waste of time and waste of money. And that, you know, you mentioned me checking once a week. It takes 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe. And, you know, I just got a little reminder. The link is there. I click on the link. Boom. 15 seconds. And so it's just something to do. But I love the Google search. So you put in, you create a Google notification.
Yeah.
You put in your address. And this way, if anyone is out there, and particularly if you have a rental or vacant land, or you have any kind of rental, Airbnb, or even a regular rental.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a big scam too. People create a false rental when it's not even for rent. So that's a great gem. So between the two things, you certainly don't need that title lock. DA investigator Greg Hans, anything else to add in terms of a way to protect yourself?
I did a piece or I did an interview a couple weeks ago, and they were asking me about zombie loans, which you and I talked a little bit about. And we probably don't have time to get into the whole what it is, but if somebody approaches you, and because they are with the housing market going back up, people's old second mortgages, HELOC, stuff like that they thought might have been forgiven back in the 8, 9, 10 or the time after that, after the market started to come back and there were government programs to help and all that. Bottom line is, if a mortgage company or a debt collection company approaches you and says that there is still an outstanding mortgage on your property, and you don't have the, you know, technical savvy, the wherewithal to do the research yourself, you can always go in and ask Melinda and her staff. They're, you know, incredibly helpful group. You can go in and ask them to help, you know, tell you what's the last thing recorded against you, or is there another debt that I'm not aware of. But The other thing that I found getting ready for that segment was that you could pay, you know, you and I know obviously what a title search is, right? You go into a sales transaction and the buyer is going to pay as part of the closing costs, a title company to do research on that piece of property and confirm that the title is not encumbered by any liens or deeds or grants that have not been revealed in the transaction. And people, you know, in general, you think that a title search can only be done in a transactional setting, but I spoke to a couple title companies, look, and they said, no, I mean, if you weren't sure if you had clean title or if there were still other outstanding debts that you didn't know about, you could pay, you know, a couple $100 to a title company. And so, you know, yeah, there's a cost, but at least I thought it was interesting because I wasn't sure. I had to call them and ask them, but I thought that was an interesting way if somebody was unsure of whether they, what debts were still outstanding on their real estate.
And maybe one wouldn't just normally do that off the top, but if they were approached by somebody claiming that there was a, at that point in time, certainly worth a couple $100 to contact a local title company and explain what you need. You know, you need basically, I don't know if it's just be a preliminary title report, but they will run something and it would be really pennies to get peace of mind if someone contacts you and tells you. And you also mentioned contacting Melinda Green, but her department is what again?
She is with the County Clerk Recorder's Office.
Okay. And she's kind of the big cheese over there, but I'm sure you could contact. But again, you could go to my website, get the link. You could check to see if anything's been recorded. And if you do get contacted by somebody claiming that you have an outstanding loan, you contact one of First American Title or Chicago Title here locally and explain to them what happened and what you need, and you could do it. Hey, Greg Hans, any relationship to Han Solo?
No, but you're not the first one to run that one on me.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's a great name. And DA investigator Greg Hans spent 21 years with the Santa Barbara Police Department and now 4.5 years in the district attorney's office. What's your partner's name who came up with that Google notification?
I'm not sure she wants me to say it on the air, but I do. I just want to make sure that she gets credit. That wasn't my idea, but that was her idea. But since I didn't get pre-authorization to talk about her on the air, I'm just going to leave it at my partner.
Well, you know, she called in. We have her on the other line, and she's really torqued off at you.
She's always mad at me for something, but it's okay.
There you go.
We do good work together.
She's your work wife. All right. Greg Hans, a DA investigator, thanks so much for your time in the interview.
My pleasure. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay. This was a client's seeking a furnished short-term rental in Montecito. Not my clients, just something I saw. They're looking from mid-February to the end of April, 3 or 4 bedrooms. Not large. Single level preferred. Pool's a plus. Flexible. Don't need to be close to the ocean. Guess how much they're willing to pay? Mid-February to end of April, Montecito. Guess how much? Go ahead. I'll tell you when we return. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.